to call the Judiciary Committee to order. Senator Little is on her way, so is Senator Jacko and Senator Halford. So Senator Taylor, the chair. We will start taking public testimony at this time, all of which is being recorded and will be available to the committee members. I'm going to start in Anchorage and ask Mr. Steve Burrell to testify. Can you hear me, Mr. Burrell?
Yes, sir, I can.
Go right ahead.
Yes, my name is Stephen C. Burrell. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association, and I'm testifying on behalf of the association. We wish to go on record in support of SB 178. This bill is an important bill for several reasons. Firstly, an individual or company conducting its business within the law, if a company is conducting its business within the law, there should be nothing in the statute that would encourage third parties to file nuisance lawsuits. This bill would remove one of the incentives for groups or individuals to file nuisance lawsuits. By removing the financial incentive, this bill would should decrease the number of suits that are filed to merely harass, to object to, and to stall projects. If fewer nuisance suits result, individual miners, individual companies, not just mining companies, but all industry will have one less artificial uncertainty when trying to develop a project. Lastly, passage of this bill will form one more tangible evidence to the international mining industry that Alaska truly wants mineral development and that the Alaska State Legislature is interested in removing the impediments to reasonable mining development. At this time, the international mining community is looking outside of the United States and Canada. They are looking to countries that are encouraging them to bring investment dollars, and this is especially the case for Latin America. Over the past 3 and 4 years, upwards of a dozen countries around the world have changed their mining laws, have changed their investment laws, have changed everything they can to encourage investment and job creation in their countries. A bill like SB 178, it could be argued, is not a huge incentive for companies, but I have to say that it definitely is an incentive from the aspect of showing that Alaska indeed wants to be considered as a place for people to invest their monies. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burrell. I should note for the record, Senator Jacko has joined us. We expect Senator Little momentarily. I've now moved down to Ketchikan, Mr. David Katz.
Thank you, Senator Taylor, members of the committee. My name is Dave Katz. I represent the Tongass Conservation Society. We are a 501c3 nonprofit with 120 members. I'd like to speak in strong opposition representing the society to both of the measures in front of us today, both SB 178 and Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4. And I'd like to point out my view that these are not only apples and pears, these are really apples and cabbages, and I'd like to discuss each of them in turn. One, starting with Senate Bill 178, this deals with tort law, and in my view, this represents very broad tort reform. Nuisance is a tort. It happens when a business or an individual, through irresponsible or unthinking operation, destroys your property value or your enjoyment of your property. And when we're dealing with natural resources, and specifically with pollution, these are often called toxic torts. I know of no other state that is considering wiping toxic torts out of the legal lexicon. And I repeat, this seems to me to be very broad tort reform. Let's examine how this would work. Let's suppose that after 4 or 5 years of searching, you find your dream waterfront property someplace and decide to borrow a lot of money and go ahead and buy the property and build your dream house on it, and you've just accomplished the American dream, and it's cost you something to do so. And then a year later, a sawmill moves in across the bay from you, and you don't mind that. That's okay. It's a typically Alaskan industry and so forth. Kind of like it being there. The only problem is a few months down the road, lots of wood waste and sawdust start turning up on your beach that you spent an awful lot of money and a lot of time to purchase. And you get a hold of the sawmill, and you say to the operator, well, look, you're destroying my property rights here. And he tells you, well, I'm sorry, the current moves past my sawmill so fast that, in fact, I'm operating well within my permit boundaries. And at that point, you have no recourse. Under Senate Bill 178, you have been deprived of your right to defend your property. Another example could be, suppose a cement plant moves into a community somewhere, and for the first 5 years or so, everybody's very happy with it, it represents economic development and so forth, and then the ownership of it changes. And within a very short time, there's cement dust everywhere. Again, you are deprived, or those people who would be impacted by this, in spite of the fact that the cement plant might be operating within its permit or have that kind of a discharge, in fact, unregulated, you would still be deprived of your right to defend your property, and that is what this bill does. I think it's worth noting that relatively little of a business's discharges or activities are actually regulated, in spite of the fact that many businesses feel that they are overregulated. Nonetheless, it is very possible for a business to operate within its formal permit and still create a nuisance. Furthermore, this bill would be an invitation to every irresponsible operator to come to Alaska because they know that they can't be sued. In fact, we will have wiped the ability of property owners to defend their property off the books. And I find it ironic that it would be a Republican-led majority that would be doing this to property owners. I'd like to turn for a moment to Senate Concurrent Resolution 4, which we are also opposed to. And point out to you the fact that although this resolution is written seeming to target special interest litigation law firms, in fact, it targets public interest litigants. And it does not, as it has been represented here in Ketchikan, target frivolous lawsuits. Rather, it targets good, solid lawsuits. And the reason why I say that is because there are already exceptions within Rule 82 which eliminate the public interest exemption for those frivolous lawsuits. If you're filing a frivolous lawsuit, you are, by definition, not a public interest litigant. Moreover, attorneys themselves can be held personally liable under Rule 11. So there are already rules in effect to deal with so-called frivolous lawsuits, and nobody wants to see those lawsuits filed. In fact, though, what this resolution would be to target really good, solid lawsuits. One example of that down in Ketchikan is the recent Herring Coalition lawsuit, which was filed by a group of citizens, an ad hoc group from across the political spectrum, that was very concerned with depletion of the herring resource down here. And in fact, that lawsuit would have been precluded by this bill. And it's worth pointing out that, in part as a result of that lawsuit, there has been language inserted by Senator Taylor, intent language, into the budget of Fish and Game, saying that Fish and Game needs to look at possible depletion of herring stocks and do something about it. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Yes, thank you, David. I appreciate that. Let's move now to Valdez or a Ms. Nancy Lefko would like to testify on 178.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor. For the record, my name is Nancy Lefko. I am president of the Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association. We represent over 300 members statewide whose businesses depend on the marketing of Alaska's natural resources. We have over 2,000 other businesses, including hunting guides and charter boat operators, whose businesses are also natural resource dependent on our databases. Most of these businesses employ 10 people or less. They are often family-owned, and the owners live in Alaska, usually in rural communities, where they provide economic diversity and community stability. We support the development of Alaska's natural resources. As business people, we can appreciate the effort required to get permits and financing for business development. We do it ourselves almost every day, seems. Unfortunately, many of our members have found that after getting their permits, making their financial investments, developing their businesses, spending their money on advertising, permits have been given to other companies to extract the very resources of which our members are already marketing, or which are given in ways that damage the resources that we are marketing. Generally, we have no objections, but sometimes when the law is questionable, agencies give permits then let the courts decide. And it's in those questionable cases that we really feel that when public interest from sue, I raise a question. If they lose, their expenses should still be paid. These are not serious suits. They are very serious suits, and the outcome has an economic impact on either side, particularly on those of us in the tourism industry. We are small business people. We do not have the economic resources of large international companies. And we need the help of these nonprofit organizations. February 178, protects the small tourism businessmen from economic disasters caused by other industries. We can have a diversified economy if we have February 178 would not protect the small tourism businesses from economic disasters caused by other industries. That's why we are opposed to it, along with the concurrent resolution number 4. We believe we can have a diversified economy if we have laws that protect small tour operators, like lodge owners, as well as private landowners, from the nuisances caused by others, and we encourage you not to support either one of these. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We move now to back to Ketchikan, Ms. Ernesta Ballard.
Thank you, Robbins. Thank you for your persistence. Senator Taylor, excuse me. Thank you for your persistence in getting this meeting underway, this hearing underway. I'd like to first address the proposed change to Rule 82. My name is Ernesta Ballard. I'm representing the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce and the State Chamber of Commerce and the Alaska Forest Association today. We had other representatives available last week who were unable to be here today. Together, the three organizations which I represent have over 500 members and associates throughout the state. We believe that it is reasonable that a prevailing party is entitled to an award of attorney's fees and costs in accordance with Alaska Civil Rule 82, notwithstanding any determination by the court that the losing party be a public interest litigant. Since 1990, prevailing public interest litigants have been entitled to awards of full attorney's fees, and losing public interest litigants have not had awards of attorney's fees made against them. The Alaska Supreme Court has effectively insulated public interest litigants from the expense of litigation if they meet the criteria adopted by the court for public interest litigant status. Excuse me, I'm shortening this up, so I'm skipping. Public interest litigation, especially with respect to environmental issues, is of relatively recent origin. Under Rule 82, as generally applied, litigants have a great incentive either not to litigate doubtful claims or to settle litigation. Public interest litigants, on the other hand, have a great incentive to litigate even weak claims because they suffer no economic burden if they lose, and they are able to impose substantial economic burdens on private companies developing state-owned resources if they prevail. The costs of economic opportunity losses must be applied against the economic value of an investment in public resources development, and litigation may cause developers to forego or substantially postpone development, even in situations where the plaintiff's claim is weak. Public interest litigation has been used with increasing frequency in the last several years, with a measurable impact on economic vitality in the state of Alaska. There have been recent estimates in the United States that litigation costs over 1% of our gross national product, an increase of 100% in recent years. We support the proposed resolution and hope that the court takes the action proposed by the Senate in revising their interpretation of Rule 82. In addition, briefly, we want to support Senate Bill 178. The points that I would have made have been covered by Mr. Burrell before me. So in the interest of time, I'll simply offer our endorsement of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ballard. Let's now move back to Anchorage. Tom Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming in fine.
Okay, thank you. Yes, my name is Thomas C. Crawford. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Senate Bill 178. My comments are derived from my experience as a minerals exploration geologist with 17 years of experience in the state. the development of a line. The prospect of having your project delayed with so little justification is very scary. The legal provisions like this are an additional disincentive to the mining companies that already perceive Alaska to be a difficult place to work because of its remoteness, its climate, lack of transportation infrastructure, and a variety of other reasons. Essentially, that existing standard provides an almost unlimited opportunity for any group or individual to legally challenge a project. As I see it, a party need only argue that their aesthetic enjoyment of an area is lessened by the development, and they would have justifiable legal grounds for a lawsuit, even if that developer is in compliance with all the standards, regulations, stipulations, etc. Certainly, this unfairly jeopardizes a company that has played by all the rules and has made an investment of many thousands and millions of dollars in hopes of obtaining a reasonable return on that investment. Basically, it seems to me to foster a tail-wagging-the-dog scenario where a party which has nothing to risk and has not demonstrated a substantial grievance can really hold the project hostage. Through its definition, nuisance as, quote, a substantial and unreasonable interference with the use or enjoyment of real property, including water, end quote. Senate Bill 178 establishes a much more realistic standard that will protect development projects from frivolous legal actions while still preserving the rights of genuinely aggrieved parties to legally challenge those projects or activities. I therefore express my support of Senate Bill 178, and I encourage the committee to favorably report the bill to the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cliff Terrell, Ketchikan.
Mr. Taylor, my name is Cliff Terrell. I'm president of Southeast Stevedoring Corporation. I'm here to speak in favor of SB 178. We're in the transportation business. We have airplanes, helicopters, tugboats, barges, and other vessels. We contract to load ships. We're agents for the owners of cruise ships and cargo ships. We employ up to 500 persons in any one day. For the current law to allow frivolous so-called nuisance to be able to stop or delay industry and commerce, only a means for preservation is to be able to stop any and all development without any penalties, monetary payments, bonds, and so forth on their part. And our employees are dependent for their living on the timber industry, the tourist industry, the shipping industry, the mining industry, as well as the fishing industry. And of course, all of us in the state of Alaska are dependent on the oil industry. The regulatory agencies have the duty and power to carry out the many requirements that industry must adhere to allow individuals whose concerns might be legitimate, but who do not understand ramifications for those whose agenda is to stop all development, no matter what the cost may be to industry, should not be allowed. And finally, there is some proposed legislation to hopefully stop persons with grudges against industry or whose agenda is to stop development. Again, we are very much in favor of SB 178. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's all I had on the teleconference network. I'd now move to the room here. Mr. Chip Toma was first up.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Chip Toma from Juneau. I'm testifying as an individual today. I had the opportunity about 3 weeks ago to attend the preliminary court motions in Edwards versus Alaska Pulp Corporation, 1SI92257CI, which was held here in Superior Court. And in my mind, this legislation, which was originally written by Mr. Jim Clark, is directed at this suit. And I'd like to express to you some of my concerns with the legislation. As I sat in the courtroom for over 4 hours, I witnessed over 9 attorneys representing the Alaska Pulp Corporation, and I quite frankly found them incompetent. I couldn't believe that so many attorneys assembled in a courtroom who had no knowledge of Sitka and its environs were there to defend a suit which had been filed against it. But the thing that struck me the most was their admission that over 10 feet of sludge exists on the bottom of Silver Bay, and because of a chemical process, is burping huge rafts of sludge throughout Silver Bay and into Sitka Sound. And that is the basis of the suit that was brought by Mr. Edwards against the Pulp Corporation. And this legislation, SB 178, in my mind, is to protect the Sitka pulp mill, even if their permit is violated. And so far as I know, and as Mr. Katz pointed out from Ketchikan, no other state has such a similar limitation on this kind of tort law. The bill, in all likelihood, is probably unconstitutional because it denies due process to property owners. It constitutes a taking of private property rights, and it may make the state liable for cost of injury to be properly caused by permitted activity. SB 178 uses permits to immunize polluters from liability, and that should not occur. And the research that I've seen says that the U.S. Supreme Court, the Sixth Circuit in Ohio, the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco, and their courts of appeal have all upheld the fact that this type of legislation is unconstitutional. The case which struck me the most was International Paper Company versus Olet, 1987. U.S. Supreme Court held that a private nuisance claim against a paper mill is not preempted by the fact that the mill operated under a federal water pollution permit. That's the end of my testimony, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'd like to submit the memo that was given to Attorney General Cole by Mr. Jim Clark, and I'll submit six copies for the committee, but in my mind, this is a blatant attempt by Mr. Clark to cover up the inadequacies of his counsels and their incompetence. I don't think that we should legislate on the fact that someone hires incompetent counsel, and I think that's what's going on here. Mr. Clark realizes he was going to lose this suit. He is going to lose this suit, and so that's the reason for the legislation. So I hope that makes an impression on you, Mr. Chairman, and I do hope you withdraw this legislation as being blatant, ludicrous, and untimely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Tolman. The next person is named Kirsch, but it's K-A-T-Y-A. Katya?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katya Kirsch. I'm the assistant with the Alaska Environmental Lobby. We have 20 member groups throughout the state of Alaska. The Alaska Environmental Lobby opposes SB 178 and Act Relating to Civil Nuisance Actions. It's not fair to prevent citizens of Alaska from having access to legal actions regarding permitted corporate activities. Alaska citizens should always have the fundamental right to protect their property rights. State permits are often negotiated with corporations. Variances are often allowed when permits are not in compliance. And citizens are not always sufficiently included in the permitting process. Private citizens should continue to have the right to due process when they believe their rights are being violated. Also, if you'll note, this legislation may stop certain legal actions this year if it's passed. It may be dangerous to set a precedent to create legislation that nullifies legal actions. This precedent could pave the way for other legislation that may stop entirely different legal actions in a different political atmosphere in future years. Let's keep the playing field level by keeping the right for civil nuisance actions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Mr. Jamie Parsons, next.
Chairman Taylor, Mr. Halford, Mr. Jacko, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 178, a bill that would clarify Alaska's general law of nuisance. My name is Jamie Parsons. I am here today only as President of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. The Board of Directors of the State Chamber met here in Juneau on March 18th and reaffirmed its stance on supporting a bill that would clarify the definition of nuisance. Passage of Senate Bill 178 would remove any doubt that an act, including the discharge or emission, occupation, or structure that is licensed, permitted, or other usage authorized by law, is not a nuisance. It certainly seems logical that after the lengthy public scrutiny process any company or individual has to go through these days, especially in resource development to secure permission to proceed, those permits should be worth something. However, a firm or individual complying with the conditions of a development permit issued by an authorized agency can never be assured that frivolous lawsuits will be filed based on activities that are allowed by that permit. Passage of Senate Bill 178 would greatly reduce, once permits are issued, lawsuits simply filed to harass or to kill a project using delaying tactics, and we know that time converts into expense. This testimony shouldn't be construed to infer that violations don't occur. If a firm is thought to be violating the terms of a permit, citizens have the option of notifying the permitting agency, whether it be EPA, Corps of Engineers, Department of Environmental Conservation, etc. If those agencies fail to respond to an actual violation, then certainly a lawsuit is appropriate. The current statute also allows a person to sue his neighbor if he believes that his personal enjoyment of his property is lessened by his neighbor's activities. What may lessen one person's personal enjoyment of his property may not bother anyone else. Passage of Senate Bill 178 would change the standard by which a nuisance would be judged from injuriously affected or lessened personal enjoyment to substantial and unreasonable interference. This makes the determination of what constitutes a nuisance more of a reflection of how an entire community functions, not just a neighbor. In conclusion, Alaska State Chamber of Commerce believes that by narrowing the definition of nuisance to mean a substantial and unreasonable interference with use and enjoyment of real property, including water, Senate Bill 78 will go a long way in reducing frivolous lawsuits and unnecessary litigation. It also strikes a good balance between the right to use one's property as one sees fit and the right to peacefully enjoy one's property without undue interference from others. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Next up would be John Litton from Sitka. John Litton is here in town. I just meant that he was from Sitka. I just received notification that Sitka is also online, and I will call on you here very shortly.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Jackal. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 178. I'm a small business person in Sitka and directly involved in the tourism industry. And in the process of finding out about this bill and looking into it a little bit further, I've contacted a number of other businesses statewide. Many of us have major investments in this state, capital investments that we have put into equipment. There are railroads, cruise ships, day boat charters, a number of Alaska businesses that can be affected by this bill, passage or non-passage. And my reasons for supporting this is that each new season, I think we find ourselves facing a new series of permits, fees, things that seem to grow on our industry. Sometimes the fees become a little bit burdensome, but I do believe the permits are for a good reason. They provide the balance that protects the state or federal interest, and they also give us that level playing field that assures other businesses that might compete with us have to go by the same laws and follow the same same level of request in the permit. And my concern here is that when I, as a small business person and as a person that has $750,000 in buses, if someone doesn't like the fact that there's a little diesel smoke in the air or something, and for the sense of nuisance, they can stop us from operating in a window that is very limited for our season, then I believe that they should also be responsible for the damage that they could cause upon us. And by passing this bill, I see that they would have to, just under, as current laws now state, there are sufficient reasons for people to bring litigation for damage. And there should be real damage if they are going to litigate. And just because of nuisance that they could delay or stop us from doing business, I think would be real harmful for us statewide and dramatically impact our industry. So again, I would ask you to support this and send the bill onto the full Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. I think one last witness here in Juneau, that's Bob Engelbrecht. That switch still thrown up?
I think it's still on.
Okay, go right ahead. Give us your name and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Engelbrecht, and I'm the Vice President of Temsco Helicopters. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 178. Temsco is a business that's subject to a great deal of regulation, both or at the local, state, and federal level, as many of the other businesses that you've heard from today. Obtaining the necessary permits and certificates and approvals is a costly and time-consuming business for us. I personally probably spend well over half of my time dealing with the regulatory issues that face us. And this is without the extra burden of potential lawsuits. TEMSCO concurs with the business community concern that these types of suits will spread even though we're operating within the regulations, and the cost of defending against lawsuits such as these can be a real hardship on a company the size of ours. So for these reasons, I'd like to support the passage of Senate Bill 178. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I know the suit is online, and would ask you please make it as short as you can because we have other bills yet to be heard, but I turn now to Mr. Donald House.
Mr. House has to leave. Our first testifier is Mayor Dan Keck.
Yeah, go right ahead, Mayor. Thank you.
Yes, Robin, I'm testifying as an individual, not as a mayor. I'd like to thank you to your committee for eventually getting us online to testify on these particular bills. I think this is the third time we've been here. We appreciate it very much. I support this legislation for a number of reasons, and I will try and keep it short. But frivolous and nuisance lawsuits have been a real concern of municipalities and local governors for many, many years, not to speak of the businesses who get tied up in these lawsuits for a considerable amount of time. Frivolous and nuisance lawsuits have been used to slow up production and keep people tied up in court for years, and a lot of times for no other reason. And this is an easy way for conservationists to keep these things tied up. So with these things in mind, I would ask you to go ahead and support this entire block of legislation and pass on to the Senate, and that we will only encourage him to pass it when the time comes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. The next person up is Don Mueller, M-U-L-L-E-R.
Hello, my name is Don Mueller. I've been a businessman in Sitka for the last 17 years. For 2 years before that, I was a chemist at the APC mill. What I would like to do today is present testimony that I prepared last Monday and facts to you, but I'd like to read it for the record today. So what I say now will be the testimony that I presented to you last week.
And Don, we have
just yesterday, I returned from Cambodia, where I spent the last 2 months working on an education project for a relief agency. If I may, I would like to draw an analogy between what I saw there and SB 178. As you all know, Cambodia has been involved with civil war and unrest for the last 25 years. As you also know, much of this has been the result of the genocidal Khmer Rouge and their ultra-extreme policies. In October of 1991, after tremendous international effort, a peace accord was signed by the parties involved. This resulted in optimism internationally and, of course, among the Khmer people. Democracy, it appeared, would soon come to Cambodia. People would finally have their country back. It soon became apparent, however, that the Khmer Rouge thought differently, and they expressed this very simply, as they always have. Anything in the peace accord that they didn't agree with, they simply went around it. If a particular agreement didn't please them at a particular time, they simply ignored it and operated by their own rules. Their own concerns were more important than the concerns of the country. SB 178 is obviously being considered because the pulp mill doesn't like the existing rules. The pulp mill, represented by Robin Taylor and Jim Clark, wants to write its own rules, especially since the mill might be in violation of the existing rules. According to the pulp mill, the rights of the mill are more important than the rights of the community it operates in. I ask that you vote against SB 178 in the interest of democracy and the rights of the citizens of Alaska. That concludes my testimony from last week, but I would like to add, I would ask that you also vote against Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4. And finally, I ask that the testimonies of Bob Ellis and Ron Dick, sent by fax last Monday, be included in today's record. Thank you.
And Don, I want you to know that any testimony that we have received is in the record already. And I apologize, of course, on behalf of the entire committee. We were tied up with budget concerns last week, and this matter did get delayed on two different occasions, and we're all sorry about that. Ms. Ernestine Griffin.
Hello, my name is Ernestine Griffin, and I'm here as the Executive Director of the Greater Sitka Chamber of Commerce. And I'm just here to report that the Board of Directors of the Chamber of Commerce voted in favor
Thank you very much. Is there anyone there in Sitka that did not get a chance to testify?
That's everyone present. Thank you.
Okay, are there any further people that have come in to Valdez or to Anchorage or to Ketchikan? Let's start with Valdez. Ketchikan. Anchorage. All right, are there any other people in the room that wish to testify on 178? Are there any other people in the room that wish to testify on SCR-4? If not, we'll move on to House Bill 151. Are there people here who wish to testify to that? I have Mr. Christensen signed up on behalf of the court system. Why don't you come forward, Chris? We'll be off teleconference at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Chris Christensen, legal counsel to the Judicial Branch. House Bill 151 was introduced by the House Judiciary Committee at the request of the Alaska Supreme Court. As the members know, under both the United States and Alaska constitutions, a criminal defendant has the right to an attorney. If he can't afford an attorney, the state must appoint one to represent him. In Alaska, defense services are generally handled by the public defender or the Office of Public Advocacy. Until 1990, statutes authorized the court to order a defendant to pay for defense services to the extent that the defendant could afford to pay at that time. For a variety of reasons, the statute was ineffective in obtaining repayment of defense costs from indigent defendants. These reasons include the difficulty and expense of enforcing this type of court order and the fact that the statute related only to a defendant's current ability to pay, ignoring his future ability. This was very restrictive when compared to the system used in many other states, which allowed a state to obtain a judgment against a defendant, which could be enforced at a later date if the defendant ever became non-indigent. In 1990, at the request of the Supreme Court, the legislature amended AS 1885-120 to allow civil judgments to be entered against defendants who are represented by the public defender or OPA without considering the defendant's current ability to pay. If a defendant became solvent at some future date, the judgment could be enforced. If the defendant remained indigent, the judgment could not be enforced. This change ensured that indigent defendants would receive counsel, but that if they ever became non-indigent at some later time, they would repay some small percentage of the cost of their representation. Now, one major problem with the statute as enacted in 1990 is that it allowed a 3-year moratorium on repayment following a person's release from incarceration. The House Finance Committee substitute for HB 151 proposes several changes to 1885-120. First, it eliminates this 3-year moratorium on repayment that follows incarceration. This moratorium currently makes it substantially more difficult for the state to recover defense costs in a timely manner. It imposes a very expensive administrative burden on the Department of Law, and the policy behind it is questionable. For example, if a person gets 72 hours in jail for a DWI, why should they not have to repay public defender fees for 3 years following their release from their 72 hours of incarceration? The second major change is codification of language that's currently contained in Criminal Rule 39. This language is intended to ensure that the repayment requirement is imposed in a fair manner. It includes a provision which allows a court to stay enforcement of a repayment judgment during the pendency of an appeal, a provision which allows a person subject to a repayment order to petition the court at any time to remit, reduce, or defer the unpaid portion of the judgment on a showing of hardship, and a provision which allows a court to remit or reduce a balance owing on the judgment or change the method of payment if the payment would impose a manifest hardship on the person or their family. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members might have.
Could you tell the committee what portion of the actual cost of attorney's fees we're really talking about ever getting repaid?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. The members should have a copy of Criminal Rule 39 in their packets. And in Criminal Rule 39, on the second page, you'll see the charges that will be imposed on criminal defendants. For example, a person who's defended for a Class B or C felony, which actually goes to trial, would be charged $1,500. But these charges are extremely low compared to what a private sector attorney would charge. Most attorneys wouldn't look at a case like that for less than $5,000 up front. So we are recognizing the fact that these people are at the low end of the scale and we're not charging them a great deal. Money will be collected by the fines collection attorney in the Attorney General's office that's funded out of program receipts that group collects. They have estimated very conservatively that with these changes, doing away with the 3-year moratorium, we'd probably take in about $850,000 the first year It's been estimated that if everyone were ordered to pay the full amount, and if none of those people had a hardship, it might be as much as $4 million a year. So once we get rolling, it is a substantial sum of money, and we'll do a good deal to help offset the tremendous costs that are incurred each year by the state in providing public defender services.
So just so I can understand what's going on here is that the moratorium has been, 3-year moratorium has been lifted, and there's no limit to the amount of time when you can collect from the indigent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jacko, no, the way it works right now is that you do not have to repay anything until 3 years after you get out of jail.
Okay.
The bill would say that you can be ordered to repay as soon as you get out of jail. Now, remember that this 3-year period is a totally arbitrary limit. It has no basis. It was just an arbitrary time limit that was chosen by a particular legislative committee 3 years ago.
So you're taking that away completely. I mean, and isn't the rationale for the 3-year moratorium, or I agree that it's probably no basis for the time span, but isn't the rationale that these people get out of jail and need some time to get on their feet and start earning money, and we're just doing away with that rationale now?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Jacko, the person who added this, that was the rationale of that committee chairman. There's a variety of problems with it. First, as I pointed out, it makes no sense when you're talking about a 72-hour DWI. Second, there are very many, tremendous percentage of defendants have left the state by the 3rd year following their incarceration, and once they've left the state is never going to recover any of that money. Third, most defendants receive a permanent fund dividend check during those 3 years, and so there is a source of money available for the state to take if it does not impose a substantial hardship on the person or their family, and the state currently is foregoing that 3 years of repayment that is available to it. Fourth, the statute's badly drafted, and the moratorium right now applies to judgments for all previous convictions. So if you got a DWI and serve 72 hours right now, then 3 years from now you got another DWI and serve 72 more hours, you wouldn't have to repay, that the 3-year clock would start all over again for your first DWI. I think that was an unintentional mistake that was added. That, you know what happens when amendments are drafted at the table, frequently things like that slip in. Another problem, of course, is under the current statute, the judge can waive the 3-year limit if there is good cause, but there's no definition of good cause, and judges around the state are each using their own individual idea of what good cause is. Some judges are always giving a person 3 years regardless of the merits of the case. Some never are. This bill would impose some standards by doing away with the time. The other tremendous problem is that it's incredibly burdensome for the Department of Law and Corrections to keep track of the 3-year limit. Remember, when someone is sentenced to a specific term of time in jail, they never serve that amount of time. They've got discretionary parole, they've got good time, they have a number of other things that may let them get out early. So Corrections and Department of Law are going to have to set up a very expensive and complicated computer tracking system to try to decide when a person gets out of jail and when the 3rd year after that rolls around. The final problem, I think, is this is another drafting error that occurred at the table. The bill reads as if, the way the bill is written, if a person is never incarcerated, they may never have to pay any money, which obviously is not what was intended, but that's the strict reading of the statute. So there are many, many technical problems and administrative problems with that 3-year limit.
How do you tell when a person is able to pay? Does this just sort of like follow them for the rest of their lives until they're able to pay it back?
Under the system which we had before 1990, you entered a criminal judgment against somebody, which is a very unfair way of recovering money. You order a person to pay money, and if they don't do it, you issue a bench warrant. They're arrested and brought before the judge. He says, "Why haven't you paid?" And you say, "Well, I can't afford it." If you've got any money, he can take it away, or he can let you loose and then issue another bench warrant if you don't repay in a period of time.
Or he can throw you in jail for not paying.
Or he can throw you in jail for not paying. This system, which was enacted in 1990 and which we're modifying, is a civil judgment. And the difference is that with a civil judgment, you've got the protection of the Alaska Exemptions Act. The Alaska Exemptions Act, AS 938, is designed to prevent people from being wiped out by their creditors. Let me give you some examples. Currently, a person is allowed to protect from their creditors, including the state, the first $62,000 worth of value of their house.
Unless a bill gets approved this year, it's going to reduce that. Anyway, excuse me.
Sure.
All the way down to 50-some thousand. I wish we all had that much equity in our houses.
$3,400 worth of personal property, such as clothes, $1,100 worth of jewelry, $3,200 worth of professional books or tools of the trade, $1,100 worth of pets, $3,400 worth of your motor vehicle, $11,000 worth of accrued dividends or loan values on your life insurance. That's actual property. When we're talking about income, you're allowed to protect from your creditors monthly cash and liquid assets of about $1,600 net. That's after all deductions that are required by law, which means after your federal income tax is withheld, after your child support is withheld. The practical effect of that is, under the Alaska Exemptions Act, you really can't go out and take anything from anybody unless they're making about $25,000 a year before taxes. So, and above and beyond the Alaska Exemptions Act, this statute would say that if a person can come in and demonstrate manifest hardship to their family, to the judge can even, say, protect their permanent fund dividend. So we're not slamming indigents. I just want to make that clear. These are people who have gotten back on their feet, and the amount that can be taken is so small that it will not force them back into indigency.
Well, I guess that doesn't really answer my question. I missed it, and all of what you said is, does someone just keep checking on them to find out if they're making enough money? And is there a fiscal note for that? Is that somebody just kind of following people around for a while?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jacko, in theory, a civil judgment can be kept alive forever until it's paid off. As if you look at the chart in Civil Rule 39, the amounts are so small that in reality a person could pay off most of those in a relatively short period of time through the permanent fund dividend. But a civil judgment can be kept alive in excess of 10 years.
So this is a debt they could take to their grave with them.
It's no different than any other civil debt.
That's correct.
There is a limitation, however, on bringing the action of 6 years because it's a contractual agreement, isn't it?
I believe so.
So they can't just sit there and wait forever for the guy to all of a sudden inherit the lottery or something.
Mr. Chairman, I know that the way this is being implemented right now by the Department of Law, they're really only implementing it by going after the permanent fund dividends of people who can't demonstrate a manifest hardship to themselves or their family to the judge. That's the least expensive way for the state to pursue a civil debtor, and in fact, that's the way the state pursues most civil or criminal debtors at the present time for child support or student loans or anything. It's the permanent fund dividend.
Do you have questions?
Yes, thank you. Are there going to be additional costs to the department if this is approved?
There are no costs to the court system, and let me point out there are no savings to the court system. The court introduces merely as a matter of public policy, not because there's a benefit to us in any way. The Department of Law is funded out of program receipts, and I believe they've put a zero fiscal note on this. They don't believe this will cost. The current law, which was passed in 1990, required them to do some things, but this eliminates a substantial part of the administrative burden. The most burdensome part of the current law is trying to get around that three-year moratorium. By doing away with that, it relieves the department of a tremendous administrative burden and allows them to do this much, much more easily and cheaply than they currently do.
Thank you. Further questions?
So it's not going to... Yeah. So you're saying it's not going to cost you anything to have someone check on these people for the rest of their lives?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jacko, no, the way I believe they have a computer cross connection between the Permanent Fund Dividend Division and the Department of Law, and what they do is simply get an assignment and then proceed after the Permanent Fund Dividend for as many years as it takes to pay the debt off. So know that. What is expensive is the current system, which we're trying to do away with, of having to figure out when a person has got out of jail and what is 3 years after that date. That's the expensive part, and that's what this bill is doing away with.
Anyone further to testify on 151?
Ready for a motion? Mr. Chairman, I would move to pass out 151 with individual recommendations.
Objection? Senator Little objects. Senator Alford?
Where's his bill goes?
Finance.
Yeah. Still goes to finance. Senator Alford?
Yes.
Senator Little?
No.
Senator Jacko?
Yeah.
Senator Taylor, yes. HB 151 moves individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, you want a motion on 178?
Yeah, on the CS first.
I would move that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 178.
Any objections? No objections. Senate Bill 178 CS has been adopted.
I object for just a second. I'm sorry I wasn't here. Mr. Chairman, could...
There should be a highlighted copy in your packet.
That's the nuisance copy.
Right.
Maybe it's not highlighted. The CS itself does two things. First, it removes and or clarifies by adding the word private on line 5 before nuisance so as to clarify the fact that we're not dealing here with public nuisance actions. That could have been misconstrued. Also on line 14 and line 13 for that matter, 13 has to do with section 0330-030. That's fences that are falling down. Alaska Statute 19.27 involves junkyards. Both of those are statutory public nuisances, and thus we omitted them or took them out of the CS so as to make certain we were not impacting those. We also deleted on page 2, line 3, paren section D. We deleted that so as not to interfere with the ability of those entities to protect citizens from public nuisances. If anything, the CS makes it a lot less expansive than what it was before.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make a comment before we go on. I do see that this is quite expansive. Even still, it still affects regulations regarding fishway hatcheries, regarding construction, regarding contaminated food, smoking, abandoned vehicles, landlord action, obstructions to navigable water, public health nuisances, water nuisances, air and land nuisances, actionable rights for nuisances, and definition of pollution, including the nuisances. So I guess I have some concerns that it's still way too broad a bill at this point, and so I object to its passage from the committee.
That isn't the motion. The motion was just to adopt
well,
the CS.
Okay.
For discussion purposes.
Once it's moved, I object.
Okay.
I ask unanimous consent on the adoption of the CS.
Being no objections, so adopted. Mr. Senator Alford.
I move that Senate Bill 178 be reported out of the committee as individual recommendations and one.
Senator Little objects. her comments should be noted on this motion. Senator Little.
No.
Senator Jacko.
Yes.
Senator Halford.
Yes.
And Senator Taylor votes yes. 178 moves from committee. Senator Halford.
We're ready for a motion on SCR 4. I move that you report out SCR 4 with individual recommendations.
Any objection? There being no objection, SCR 4 is reported out with individual recommendations. That's it.
Have you adjourned?
Nope. Not yet. I didn't know if there's anything else the committee might want to bring up. There being nothing further, we're in adjournment.